Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four!
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour Extra Bits, our little gift for you podcast subscribers. This week, we meet Derek Bardawell, the author of No Win Race, a new book which looks at being black and British in the 21st century.
Derek Bardawell is a writer, an award-winning charity leader, and his new book, No Win Race, is out now, talking about being black and British and sports fans sometimes in the UK. Hello, Derek. Welcome to Badass Women's Hour.
Thank you for having me.
So you called the book No Win Race. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that at the end of the book, you haven't found the answers to the questions?
I would be a millionaire if I had all of the answers. But one thing, I guess to some degree, I would say that there are some answers that are in the book that perhaps the powers that be have either ignored, swept under the carpet, or tried to silence. And I guess for me, part of writing the book was being able to expose some of the brilliant people who perhaps you don't see in the public eye, who have either created programs or made stances that should be noted and shouldn't be swept under the carpet.
It's a very personal book because it was sort of inspired by your relationship with your child, and then it talks about your relationship with your father.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, well, sport was a way that we all bonded. Well, we still bond. We'll be watching the Champions League final in a couple of weeks' time together and, you know, eating good food and shouting incredibly loudly together, you know. Because, you know, as a kid, it was a platform that presented positive images of black people. You know, it was a space, I guess, where there was lots of progression. But as the years have gone on, you tend to realise and you grow up that progression is in a space that's very comfortable for this country and very comfortable for, you know, the mainstream, and that's black physicality and black people on the field of play. The progression off the field of play, you know, I say in the book that, you know, people are happy with black bodies, but not with black brains. And I guess part of the journey of the story is how some things have changed, and maybe the racism that's experienced is not quite so blatant, but racism is still there. It's still very much prominent in this country. But it's just, it mutates. It's a very different lens. And the worry for me is how my son will try to cope with that in a country that is in denial about racism.
So listening to you, I completely agree. But I also think back to my memories of, for me, black British sporting heroes. So Frank Bruno and Chris Eubank and Linford Christie, they were absolutely acceptable until they did something quote unquote wrong. And that's when everything changes and they become the most hated person. And it's as though the thing that they have done, there's no redeeming themselves. And so I hear you, but I also struggle with that. You, as long as you are towing a very specific line, you are fine. But there is no room for deviation, whereas white players, you know, can ebb and flow, not be very good, not win. commit a crime and still, you know, still be heralded after
sleep with their key player's wife.
Yeah, you know, do all sorts, and it's absolutely fine. Yeah. And even now, thinking about Raheem Sterling and everything that he goes through, and in the news reports, it just said he's just done something amazing. I don't really know what he did. Mm-hmm. He like scored some extra goals or something. I'm obviously not into football.
Not my area. I don't know.
So basically, he's broken a record for scoring goals in some kind of championship. I'm sure people at home who know sport are like, "What, man? What are you talking about?" Anyway, but he is absolutely vilified. Yeah. Anthony Joshua. Again, has to toe a line.
Absolutely.
The minute that he starts losing, Lewis Hamilton.
Absolutely.
Again, you start losing. Tiger Woods, and you cannot do anything wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I guess the Raheem Sterling story in the last few months has been in the public eye quite a bit, because he's come out and been very vocal, and I absolutely applaud him for doing that. But historically, you know, and to this day, black athletes cannot get away with as much as white athletes can. You're right, they have to toe a line. But at the same time, it's been a very important stance that he's come out with, because I'm not sure an athlete in this country of that stature, and he is the best player, best English player at the moment, has come out and made that stance. But you know, we can't stick to individual incidents of racism, and we can't stick to, okay, this is a particular campaign and something that's happening now. The book will tell you that, you know, this has been happening historically and will continue happening, and you need to have a deep, sustained, systemic approach to doing this. And again, I look at this as a great moment, but it is a moment. Until I actually see the impact of that, and until I see the faces that sitting around the board table making the decisions or signing the checks being different, then nothing's going to change. It will stay as a moment. So it needs to be deep and it needs to be sustained.
But what? What is the change ultimately?
Well, let's put it this way. I would look at it this way. I'm black, I'm male. And so these issues, I live it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I can't leave it. Okay. If there is people that sit around the table, leadership wise, who can leave it, who are not living it, then they're not the right people to be around the table. If anyone thinks for one moment that England win the World Cup through some dated conception of empire, okay, then they're deluded. They're absolutely deluded. England will win the World Cup because it will be a hyphenated nation, people of dual identity who will win the World Cup for England. If you do not have people that recognize that sitting around the table making decisions around that, then I would absolutely question who's sitting around the table in the first place to be making the decisions. And for me, that stands for not just sport, not just football, but that stands for every institution in this country.
We're going to keep talking to Derek after this break.
Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
She'll get you talking.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Derek, before the break, we were talking about how, as a black man in Britain, you look around the boardrooms, you look around government, and you're like, where am I?
Yeah.
How is that going to change? Because I look at it and I have the same question, but I'm like, I feel like we have told everybody this so much, and the snail's pace of movement is exhausting.
Yeah, and you know, the snail's pace, you know, I think, so I think for one, people keep saying to me, oh, well, it's just a generation that needs to die out. But it's not a generation that needs to die out, because, you know, you still have a younger generation that thinks that racism doesn't exist. Yeah. So first and foremost, you have to acknowledge that it exists. And you have to acknowledge that in order to do your job well, and in order to serve people well, that, you know, you need to address this as an issue. If a teacher is achieving, you know, great results with only a particular section of kids, and they're not, you know, working to benefit, you know, kids of color, then you would call them a bad teacher. So why would you enable that to happen in, I don't know, commentary for sport? Or why would you enable people that are heads of sports to get away with that? So you do need an absolute new conception of how you recruit and what good looks like. Because, you know, you would say, you know, it's not about having a diversity and inclusion person in your HR department. It's actually about having someone that, as I said, lives it and breathes it, who is making those key decisions right from the beginning. And until people realize that, and then until people actually look at models, be it, I don't know, different models that have actually worked to benefit around these issues, then, you know, we're just going to have the same decision makers making those choices.
What do you think of things like the Rooney Rule in the US, which says, so one of the things I thought was really interesting about your book, you talk about how when we look at the number of black players in things like football, there's large numbers of black players, but you don't see the same levels in management, coaching, etc. And they had this with the NFL in the US. So they instituted a rule, which was, I think, on the long list, you had to have a certain number of African-American candidates. Do you think that has worked or not?
I don't think it's good enough. I don't think it's strong enough. Over here, I would look outside of sport. You know, I don't know what the levels of diversity are at, I don't know, Netflix, but, you know, I was reading a blog recently in terms of their model, and their model is incredibly successful in terms of the content that they produce that celebrates what they've got. You know, I went back in the book and looked at the Great Britain basketball team back in 1988, and the level of diversity in that team, trust me, if people, the administrators at the time, had recognized what they had at the time, basketball would not be a marginalized sport at this particular point. I also look at things like, I don't know, the Harlem Children's Zone in America, and what they've done with black leadership around, you know, social issues, and what they've done from a completely systemic level. So for me, it's, you know, completely restructuring what's going on. But, you know, you've got to look outside of sport to look at these things. And at the moment, the Rooney Rule might be the best we have for sport as an example, but I would look towards, as I said, be it Harlem Children's Zone or the Women's National Basketball Association. The WNBA celebrates not just the diversity, but it also celebrates the activism of their athletes as part of their model. And that has not affected the effectiveness of that particular league.
I completely agree with you that we need to look at systems, but I'm also, I'm thinking about the individuals. So John Barnes, Ian Wright, Sol Campbell, all of, you know, those guys could have been in management positions by now. I think Sol has been trying for a while, and is currently the manager of
Macclesfield. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kept them up.
So. And given that he was an Invincible, and I didn't really know what an Invincible was. Is it Invincible?
Invincibles. Arsenal.
Yeah, I was walking next to him, and someone was like, "That he's an Invincible." I was like, "What's that?" And they were like, "Oh no." Anyway, why are these individuals not breaking through? Is it the system, or is it that pathway from being a player to being a manager to the boardroom just doesn't exist? Because it's not like there are lots of football players that actually get into those spaces. So is it also about creating pathways, full stop?
Well, those pathways exist for ex players that are white, so, you know, the pathways are there. But again, it is changing the system, because ultimately, if you sit round the table and someone looks at you and says your face doesn't fit, then it doesn't matter whether you get an interview, and it doesn't matter whether you're absolutely exceptional for your job. If you don't get that level of support from the boardroom when you're in those positions, or you're not supported, you know, we've just had an incredible manager, Chris Hughton, who was recently sacked from Brighton, you know, after keeping them up in the Premiership. And he's done a remarkable job there. But, you know, and again, I'm not making any accusations here or anything, but I'm just saying that, you know, what you alluded to earlier, Natalie, about the line that black athletes and black managers have to play is so much thinner than their white counterparts, that you're talking about an absolute change of the system in order for that to change. But you have more than capable black managers and coaches who could be doing those jobs. But, you know, it's not down to them. Right. Because, you know, we know what's happened in society. We fix, you know, the black kids, we fix them. You've got to challenge it systemically. And if systemically you're talking about what the leadership looks like at the moment, if you're talking about what recruitment looks like at the moment, then those are the things that you need to start tackling. And they need to be held accountable. If they're not held accountable at the highest levels, then nothing's going to change. And as I said, you're talking about a long-term sustained change. You're not talking about a campaign, and you're not certainly not talking about it on an individual level.
But I'm going to put it back on footballers. I don't see footballers standing up to campaign or become activists for anything. I don't see them getting behind women. I don't see them giving their money to charity. I don't see them doing anything. And I'm being quite hyperbolic here, but I don't see them doing anything other than driving flash cars and trying to find the girlfriend or the wife that fits a certain model. And so when will footballers step up and say, do you know what? I'm in a team. I back my team. Yep. You've got examples in here of other footballers being racist. So if the footballers can't be bothered to stand up for anyone else, I'm like, do you know what? Why should I be standing up for you?
I think for me, that's why, you know, the Eniola Aluko case for me was so important, because I think she was that person that stood up.
But again, a woman.
Can you give us, sorry, for anyone who doesn't know that, can you?
Well, just because she had experienced racism within the England national team, and she had, you know, she had brought it up, and she you know, had been able to represent herself and that particular issue really, really well. But I think what was brilliant about what she did is that, again, she looked at that and tackled it systemically. She did it with unbelievable dignity, but with not, in my opinion, again, I don't know the inside workings of it, but not with a high level of support. You didn't see, I think it was Stormzy was the most vocal person that came out that supported her. But to me, that is not a story that should be lost, because for all of the things now that Danny Rose and Raheem Sterling are doing, I think that's off the back of what Eniola had done and what she had achieved. And I don't think that as things go on and all of the media hype goes on about racism in sport at the moment or in football at the moment, that that story, that shouldn't be lost, you know, because for me, that was the game changer. That was the door that opened. And that's the thing that gave, I think, footballers now more agency to be able to say things. But absolutely, if you look at sport historically, it has silenced women of colour historically. So I think for me, that was a kind of important end to the book, but an important lens in terms of looking at where solutions will come from in the future.
I obviously agree with you, but I'm frustrated about the fact that the men have been going through this for ages, and it took a woman, a black woman, to stand up and say, this isn't good enough, even when her teammates wouldn't stand beside her. And I didn't see any of the old guard standing up to back her, and their careers aren't even on the line because they don't even play anymore, but they didn't say anything. And I didn't see any of the new guard standing up to back her. So it's just a bit like, well,
Do you think this is, you talk in the book, Derek, about how you thought that people were going to, when they had a level of success, they were going to be more political. You're like, you wanted more Ian Wrights, and then I wanted more political Ian Wrights. Do you think that there is almost a generation that were kind of taught that success comes at a price, and the price is when you get that success, you keep your mouth shut and you play the game?
Historically, yes. But at the moment, you're talking about the levels of wealth that these athletes have at the moment. they don't need to worry about that as much as they perhaps needed to in the past. You know, I would have said 20, 30 years ago, you know, if you were going to be vocal, you would have probably been pushed out of the game. Yeah. It's going to be really difficult if you are playing for England, got 40 or 50 caps behind you and several million Twitter followers, to be able to get pushed out of the game that way, or if you've got a massive sporting brand behind you, really, really difficult. But, you know, again, I think, you know, it's great that the athletes now are using their voice. You know, when I was writing it last year, none of this stuff was happening. Mm-hmm. It's happening now. But again, you know, I am interested in how long the athletes, as well as the people that are backing the athletes, stay on this particular issue, because, you know, at the end of the day, those athletes are still living with this issue. They're still living with these problems. And like anyone that's black and either successful or trying to cope with life in this country, it's incredibly tiring and you don't leave it. So all of the people that are backing these athletes at the moment and enabling them or helping them to get to this spot, you know, I want to see if they're still going to be around in a year's time or 2 years time or 3 years time, because if they're not, then it's just a moment for them. But for us, it's not a moment. This is like a permanent thing for us.
What do you think about sports brands that are talking about racism? So Nike's recent stand with the American footballer and civil rights activist. Yeah. Do you think that more brands should be making stands in sport? Because they have a lot of impact and a far-reaching reach.
Yeah, but there's a I guess the issue for me is there's one thing making a stand because you're going to make a profit from it. But actually, if some of the things that you do contradict that, and you would find with probably a number of sporting companies that their ethics around the contracts and their sponsorships would absolutely contradict the stance that they're making, then you know, I don't see that as being something that will be sustained over a long period of time. So it's great because it maybe gives the athlete who gets pushed out, like Colin Kaepernick, you know, has been pushed out of the sport, it gives him the ability to be able to earn as well as to be an activist. But actually, if that sports company or a sports company is contradicting that in their behaviours with other athletes or other lesser known athletes or women of colour in terms of their, then how impactful is it really going to be?
And what you're specifically talking about there is the fact that Nike were pulled up for having clauses in the contracts that didn't support women who were pregnant. So if you were pregnant, you're ultimately ducked fees.
Derek, we started the interview and I said the book's called No Win Race, and that sounds like there's no good answers. Coming back to that, just before we end, did you find anything that you were like, actually, this is working and we can do more of it?
Please,
you
know, say yes.
Just one little thing.
Do you know what? As I said, me being cautiously optimistic is the fact that in the practices of, you know, people that I highlight in a book, like Michelle Moore does unbelievable work. You know, the WNBA, you know, I point to people and to leagues and to athletes that have done things that are absolutely remarkable in the book. As I said, I want to see more of those people in power, and I want to see more of those models being adopted as opposed to what we see at the moment.
Brilliant. Derek Bardwell, thank you so much. Book No Win Race is out now. It is brilliant. It's a story of belonging, Britishness and sport. I encourage you all to go and read it. 1, 2, 3, 4! This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour, HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.